Welcome to the first Two-Eyed Seeing Camp Project podcast. The Two-Eyed Seeing Camp is a partnership first established between Mount St. Vincent University, Spagonakety First Nation, Acadia First Nation, Pictolaning First Nation, and Mi'kmaq Kinaladaway. This growing program includes a variety of activities and events created for Mi'kmaq youth. This work is informed by the guiding principle of Two-Eyed Seeing, offered by Elder Albert Marshall, the late Merdita Marshall, and Cheryl Bartlett of Unimaki, Cape Breton. Elder Albert Marshall's contribution to developing the concept of Two-Eyed Seeing is internationally recognized. Albert works with many communities to teach them the principle and related concepts and practices, an embodiment of humility and wisdom. Elder Albert agreed to sit down with Chelsea Purdy, MSVU student, Mi'kmaq Women, and Two-Eyed Seeing Camp Project Coordinator to discuss Two-Eyed Seeing. This is a podcast of their conversation.
Thank you so much, Albert Walalin, for having me here with you today and sharing some of your knowledge with me. I don't know if you want to just do a quick introduction of yourself, and then we can get started with a few questions.
Okay. Niin telvisi ja golibie maasla. Tiamuna niina nabuisuustiega. Niina leivia miikamagi. Tarvuikin eskisoni. Olta asi kiskuulla niin kiskaajiiskaa. Kisijaknudam. Kistimuloa. Takoimme jihto kilo ulsut tohsab. Kes nähä sikin amasukti tohsab. Yeah, my name is Albert Marshall, and I am from Mi'kma'ki. And I do reside in the community college Kisoni. And I am from the Moose Clan. And I'd like to express my appreciation for being given the opportunity today to share a little bit of what I know of who we are as Mi'kmaq people from Mi'kma'ki.
Thank you. So one of the first questions that I wanted to ask you was just about Two-Eyed Seeing in general and how you understand and describe Two-Eyed Seeing. And I also wanted to know if that understanding of Two-Eyed Seeing has evolved, say, over the past 10 or 20 years for you.
Well, Two-Eyed Seeing, or Edwaktamuk, in my humble opinion, is a fundamental principle of who we are as Mi'kmaq people. Now, and I honestly and truly believe, of course, that Two-Eyed Seeing is very much inherent to the Aboriginal ways of thinking. Because it wasn't that much longer ago when we were hunters and gatherers. Each time you come back and you kind of reflect on some of the actions and some of the ways in which what you did was not really meant to question the integrity of those actions, but rather you're always looking at your actions as to how can one fine-tune each action so that you will always be well prepared to meet whatever challenges that you may need. So Two-Eyed Seeing, then again, as I said, is a fundamental principles of who you are as a Mi'kmaq people. For example, I have one lens, which is what I would call a Mi'kmaq eye, in which I see everything from that perspective. And since now we have to coexist with other cultures, with other people, with different ways of knowing, I also have to use my other lens as to where and how must I try to integrate or put the other knowledges with mine. And of course, it's really important to think and to say that I can take the best from what my ancestors and my forefathers have left for me as a Mi'kmaq, and I also have the prerogative to take the best from whatever these newcomers have brought forth, because as we should all be reminded that we now have to coexist because we no longer can be hunters. We can no longer be hunters and gatherers. We can no longer sustain ourselves in the natural world. And now we have to enter into another wage economy. And that wage economy now has to deal with a lot of technological skills and knowledges. So by constantly weaving back and forth between these two ways of knowing, I think it gives us an opportunity not just to coexist, but also be able to co-learn from what others that would share their knowledge with us. So again, to YC, and I think it's very much incumbent upon us to always reflect from that perspective that I, as a Mi'kmaq person, I think and I see and I feel everything from who I am as a Mi'kmaq. And when I invoke into the other eye, I also have to know that I depend on others for whatever knowledge that they may have to give me the better opportunities. I've not just been able to sustain myself, but also to meet the challenges what the future may bring forth for me.
Mm-hmm. So has your understanding or interpretations of two-eyed seeing changed at all since maybe back in the 90s when you first started talking about this with people?
Well, as you know, knowledge, even our knowledge, evolves.
Mm-hmm.
When that concept, as I said before, this concept is very much inherent into our way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, 25 years ago, it was important for us for that concept to be coined, especially to help the young people to become aware of who they are as Mi'kmaq people, and hopefully through this concept of two-eyed seeing. They would see themselves that, you know, yes, I am a Mi'kmaq person, and therefore I have to know as much as I can of who I am as a Mi'kmaq. So as time went on, this concept had to be coined from another perspective to Edwaptim, which translates to you look at everything from another perspective. And then that other perspective also was meant for our young people to be empowered to think and to think by learning who they are and by using the knowledge that they have, so that they will then have a prerogative to determine for themselves. On one hand, they have the best from what our ancestors have left for them. And they now have, with the other land, they have now a prerogative to look at the best that they will need from the other cultures, not just to coexist, but also to become self-sustaining in a balanced and harmonious way.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there's many differences that you've noticed between, say, your generation and some of the younger generations coming up? I know you had spoken a little bit about that before we had started. Could you speak to that a little bit more?
Well, as a product of residential schools,
mm-hmm.
and a product of another program initiated by the Department of Indian Affairs called Centralization. In my days, not that we lost our identity, so we lost faith of who we were, but there was no opportunity for us to be able to put our languages into daily use or daily practice. And with everything that was around us, it was really difficult, because if people could only understand, during that period of time from 1939 up until 1990s and 2000, people were very much struggling just on this survival mode. you know, a lot of us have no marketable skills because we don't have enough education background to access any technical schools or whatever to access technological schools. So survival mode was the main focus at that time. But as time went on, people were beginning to reawaken, and I'm sure they began to ask themselves, of who am I? And where do I come from? And why am I here? And that word, I believe, became very, very important. Why am I here? And once you can deduct, then you as an Aboriginal person, of why you are here, then you begin to wonder, you know, what place do I have if I'm not here as a Mi'kmaq? And what other foreign transformations must I subject myself to become a member of something in which I'm not part of? There's nothing in there that's reflective of who I am, other than just being labeled as a Mi'kmaq.
So, do you have any recommendations about how that passed and how our identity as Mi'kmaq people can be taught to youth?
Well, I believe that we have to give credence or credit to our ancestors by acknowledging that despite of all the hardship, of all the atrocities that they were subjected to, they somehow managed to hold on to the spirit or the essence of who they are as Mi'kmaq people, which meant, in all extreme cases, a lot of our ceremonies, a lot of our knowledges had to go underground, and they could only be taught in isolation. So with that, I believe, you know, we should really pay a great homage to our ancestors, not just for their resiliences, but for their determination, and taking it upon themselves that it was their responsibility of ensuring that the survival of who we are as Mi'kmaq people will always be there, not only for any generations, but as well for the future generations. Because ultimately, I think this is our inherent responsibilities of ensuring that who we are as Mi'kmaq people will survive for the next seven generations. And that of who we are as Mi'kmaq people has to be the language, our cultures, our ceremonies have to be part and parcel of determining of who we are as Mi'kmaq people.
You mentioned the seven generations there. Could you speak a little bit more to what that is to you?
Well, the seven generation derives from the word Nedukulimka. Mm-hmm. Nedukulimka, of course, gives you a privilege to be able to extract the gifts from the Creator, whatever those gifts may be for you. But you don't have the right to compromise the ecological integrity of the area. And now, we also have to say, you cannot compromise the cleansing capacity of the system, because our Mother Earth has been subject to a lot of these abuses, chemicals, and over harvesting of all our species. So through that word Nedukulimka, it also reminds you that while I am here, whatever that time is, we don't know. But while I am here on Earth, I have to be very mindful that every action that I take cannot and will not compromise the ecological integrity of the area, because again, it's through that word nedukulink that reminds us on a daily basis that I am not a superior being, but rather I'm just a very small part and parcel of this wonderful creation. And unlike any other species out there, we have a cognitive mind. And that cognitive mind can be used to manipulate even our natural world to our own needs. So then it was important for us to put something in place in which it will remind us. Each generation will be reminded of leaving this place better for the future generations. And in this case, 7 generations, I realize, it's a long period of time based on a human scale. But when it comes to natural world, it's only a blink of an eye. So 7 generations then. One generation in our understanding is 120 years. Why? Because we honestly believe that within 120 years, a living memory can survive. So each generation has a responsibility of ensuring through their actions of helping others, especially the young people, to be constantly be critical in their thinking through their examples. And this is where I believe it is very important and incumbent in all of us to ensure that the knowledge holders will always be not just be respected, but also be utilized and to be used to help them share the knowledge that they have, and also to help them to keep this knowledge going, and by planting it, by sharing it with the young people, so that this young generations then will also take it upon themselves of ensuring that during their lifetime they will do everything in their power of maintaining and enhancing the essence of who they are as Mi'kmaq people.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke a lot about the environment and some sustainability stuff there. And I'm wondering what you think about the difference between the rights of humans versus the rights of a plant or an animal, say a fish to swim or a plant to grow. And do you think that there is any difference between those things in your opinion?
Well, as you know, from a Mi'kmaq understanding, we believe, and we have been reminded over and over again through time, that nature has rights.
Mm-hmm.
Humans have responsibilities. And with that responsibility, you are compelled always look at nature, of nature having rights, that we want to do everything in our power to ensure that the laws of nature will supersede the man-made laws. And this is not just said or done in just in any way, but you know, it's really a lesson for should be for all humanity, that we are so connected and dependent upon her to provide our every need. Look at this building here, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Words like your environment will provide your every need, your dwelling need, your food, your medicines, your education. Because unless we become intimately knowledgeable and connected to our Earth Mother, how can we possibly survive? Because we need her. We need a clean air. We need a clean drinking water. We need a fertile soil, so that biodiversity in which we need and we use, and so does our Mother Earth also needs that biodiversity for her to be healthy and well balanced, not just for us, but for all the living things that are on upon her. on, above, or below.
So how do you think we can teach some of those things and appreciation for Mother Earth and nature to our youth?
Well, in my humble opinion, to really put a strong emphasis on passing this knowledge, it has to be done from the language. Because it's through the language that you become intimately knowledgeable and connected to your own environment. And it's through the language that will help us to foster the kind of responsibilities that we will now need to be able to, not just to be able to sustain ourselves, but also to ensure of passing on that knowledge for the future generations, so that they too will have a better chance of surviving, or hopefully better than what we had in while we were here.
So do you think that maybe land-based learning could play a big role in that as well?
Well, you see, we have been taught so much that we are part of this creation. And if we hope to survive, we have to become intimately knowledgeable and connected to her again, all over again. Because again, we need her so much. We need her so badly. For everything that we need, she has it. But we also have responsibilities. And those responsibilities are very clear. That we cannot, and we will not, compromise the ecological integrity of the area. So I think, the more we become intimately knowledgeable and connected to our natural world, then we will be able then to see ourselves as being very much part and parcel of it. Now, we talked about where we are, where we come from, who we are, and where we come from. And I think it'll be interesting to look at other letters. R. Again, through the language, through this collective consciousness, we are taught and encouraged to respect ourselves, because we are very much part and parcel of this wonderful creation. And by respecting ourselves, then we are opening our hearts to be respectful for others. And that others does not just include humans. That others includes every living energy, entity that's on this Mother Earth. So by expanding that word respect, that will help us to guide us as to how do we move forward. Since we are very much part and parcel of this wonderful creation, and we know this wonderful creation is sacred, and it is our responsibility to be revered, so we too have to be revered. So reverence then becomes just as important. Now, since we no longer can be the way we were, we now have to coexist with others. And we also have to find a good way, as to how can we coexist a right way with the people that are around us. So let's use the word reciprocity. Reciprocity, as I understand it, means to me constantly weaving back and forth between other perspectives, other ways of knowing, or other ways of doing things. So by embracing that word reciprocity, we are constantly encouraging ourselves, helping us to coexist with everybody and anybody. Because again, to our languages, to our cultures, we have been taught that each and every one of us, no matter what nationality or what language we may be speaking. We have something that the Creator has given us that will help someone else. So again, by constantly being mindful of this weaving, he said, we always look at others as to what we can learn from them. Now the final one is responsibility. Again, if we do not take responsibilities of our own actions, we're humans. We have something that no other creature has. And sometimes we might do things or say things that are not sociably or ethically or legally acceptable. And each and every time we step out of line, we have to humble ourselves and say, and put these in the palm of our hands, this is what I have done, and this is what I have to do to reconcile it. So unless I owe up to my own actions, how can I expect others to behave as a way in which I demand? So responsibility then has to be from within. And if that responsibility is seen and is reflective, not just on individually, but on culture and on nationhood, then I believe responsibility then will ensure us that each and every one of us will live by their own responsibilities, so that we, when I say we, it's like being a sweat lodge, we say emsidnogoma, all our relations, so that all our relations will also have an opportunity to survive and to be sustained, because we need them. We need them more than we need them. They don't need us. Because we need them, because they're the ones that are going to be constantly creating and generating biodiversity. Because it's through this biodiversity, and this is what keeps our Mother Earth alive and healthy and sustaining.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of what you're saying, that it seems like there's a lot of connections between those different things, like humility and respect and reciprocity. Could you comment a little bit about the interconnection between those things and the importance of how those things are not separate from one another, but how they work together?
Well, you see, I believe those responsibilities have to be grounded into something. And to me, they're grounded in the language, mm-hmm. in a culture, in the ceremonies. And I think it's very simple. It's a simple deduction that unless we all make a concerted effort of what our responsibilities are, and not allow ourselves anymore to be the pawns or to be the cause of what's happening by being silent, by being inactive, and by being in denial that someone, for their own personal gain or needs, is actually compromising the ecological integrity of the area, of our environment. And in so doing, are they not compromising the chances of us surviving? Because we know deep down that we need her. We need her for our every need we have, especially our physical needs. We need her for food, clothing, ceremonies, etc., and all that stuff. But also, we need her so that once our journey ends here, we will know that people that are behind us and people that are not even here yet will not only have the same opportunities as we had, but hopefully better opportunities, because of what we have left for them. So I guess the overall objective then in all of us is to ensure that we're always going to strive for better, to be better, to be a better human being than we were yesterday. And I think if we can somehow impart with that idea that we need each other. We are interconnected and interdependent. And with that mindset, I think it will plant that sense of responsibility in all of us. That no matter who I am, no matter where I come from, but why am I here, is that I'm going to be constantly using the gifts that the Creator has given me to help someone else. And in our case, as a Mi'kmaq people, we also have this inherent responsibility of ensuring that we'll always make sure that our actions will reflect on the young minds, to be always critical in their thinking in a good way. And from that, and with that, it will always remind them that not only we're not alone, but that we cannot survive alone. We need others. So I think with this concept of 2I-seeing, as it evolved through the years in the last 25 years, initially started off as a looking at everything from another perspective. And once you probe into that for a period of time, you know, maybe there is a need for us to embrace a spirit of collaboration. And again, once that was done for a while, then it became apparent that maybe we need also inject another concept, which would be co-learning, learning from each other. Because it's through this exchange that we stand a better chance of surviving. And for us, as Mi'kmaq people, relationships are critical. So by constantly reminding ourselves and by repeating of what constitutes a relationship, it's through the exchange of stories. Mm-hmm. Because it's through this exchange of stories that each and every one of us will know of who we are, where we come from, and why we are here. And you know, sadly though, up to now, we could only be talking about three R's. We have not had a chance to talk to the fourth one yet, because that stories of ours have not reached a point where we will be considered reputable or something like that. So the mainstream has not really fully embraced us in any way or in any shape or form, in which we still are separate, we still are oppressed, we still are being denied to be who we are as Mi'kmaq people. But just think, if somehow we can somehow constantly be planting these seeds of knowledge, and this seed of knowledge will have their fundamental objective would be is to remind us how interconnected, how interdependent we are. The more we think about that, the more we embrace that concept of collectivity, then we know we can talk about where are we going, because that journey forward will require all the knowledges that are around us and that are available to us. So in this case, by having in our hearts the Aboriginal knowledges and the mainstream knowledges, then I believe we can seriously then begin to discuss or to talk about. Where are we going? We haven't reached that point yet, because socially, in every aspect, especially in education, education has not been very friendly to us, because education has not made any attempt to transform its system to include us and to be and for it to be reflective of who we are as Mi'kmaq people. Education system, by and large, in my humble opinion, I think has been used as a major guerrilla warfare tactics to kill the spirit in us of who we are. And if you are mindful of what constitutes wellness, and for us it's very simple. For I to be well, I have to be well balanced physically, emotionally, cognitively, and spiritually. And if those four points constitute total wellness, if any of those factors are missing, and apparently I'm not well, am I? And if I'm not well, how could I possibly excel? How could I possibly excel so I can better sustain myself and help others? Because I'm not complete. And for us to be complete, those four domains have to be maintained and enhanced in a balanced and harmonious way. That's who we are as Mi'kmaq people.
So, do you have any thoughts or advice that you would share with non-Mi'kmaq or non-Indigenous people who are interested in learning more about Two-Eyed Seeing, about learning more about Mi'kmaq knowledge, or engaging with communities, whether they're in the education system or government or a number of different areas?
I believe, despite some of the challenges that we are facing now, which is COVID-19, or whatever is numbered on. To us, we are reading this as our Earth Mother is sending us a message. And that message should be very clear. And that is, we should all spend some time of inner reflection. And imagine for a moment, you put your two fingers in a V, mm-hmm. in a V position. And imagine ourselves, we're all on this, on the bottom of this V. Doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, we're all humans are on this bottom. And we should be looking at this V. We know we have a prerogative. We know we can continue as business as usual. Or we can really do really inner reflection and see where we come from and how we got here and what devastation have we caused to Earth Mother. So it should be incumbent upon us at this juncture to really look at that part in which of how we got here and at what cost. And really take this time of embracing this idea, just how we should make every concerted effort to try to embrace the spirit of collaboration, embrace the spirit of co-learning, because the knowledge that we all have been given, I think will have a major role to play as to what kind of a roadmap do we need of ensuring that not only we survive in this generation here, but also to ensure that not only the future generations will also have the same opportunities as we have, but hopefully better. Because, again, it should become incumbent in all of us that the essence of life And the main part of that, of course, is clean air, clean drinking water, and a fertile soil. And if those three main points are maintained in a balanced and harmonious way, then we can rest assured that the biodiversity, and as I understand what biodiversity is, it's a lifeline for Mother Earth. So our main responsibility should be from here on in, do everything in our power to use the gifts that have been given to us by the Creator, and to use those gifts not only to maintain, but also to enhance biodiversity. Because through biodiversity, it creates balance and harmony, and maintains the lifeline for Earth Mother. Because even in our language, we use the word Amsudnogama. In each some of the ceremonies, in the sweat lodge ceremonies, which reminds us that we are just a very small part and parcel of this wonderful creation. And when our times here are ended, where do we go? We go back in the soil. And while in that soil, we become nutrients for some other life form. And that life form again becomes a nutrient for some other life form. So this cycle is continuous. That's why this word is so rich. Amsudnogama. It's a continuation of life. Whether we're alive or dead. So I think this is something to me should be very, very encouraging for everybody. To redefine that word differences. Differences are wonderful. That being different is a wonderful trait, I believe and I understand. Because it's through these differences that highlights the facts that we have special gifts. And for those special gifts to be used collectively, of ensuring that no one, that none of us, will ever do anything to compromise the ecological integrity of the area, or now compromise the cleansing capacity of our area, because we solely depend upon her. If she is not healthy, if she is not productive, how can we be healthy? And how can we be productive? Because nobody, and I mean that, nobody, every living entity here cannot survive without clean drinking water, without clean air, and with fertile soil. So I think with those simple terms and words, people should be able to put their differences aside, because being different is wonderful. But those differences should not be used in a negative way or in a destructive way by dividing and conquering others, or by suppressing, or by labeling, but rather see ourselves. Doesn't matter what languages we speak. Doesn't matter where we come from. We're all here for one purpose only, and that's to ensure that we will be well sustained while we are here. And while we are here, we've got to make sure as well that the next generations will also have the same opportunities as we had, and hopefully better. So that they too can sustain themselves. So they too can gain knowledge on what nature is teaching us, and what our relatives are teaching us, in which they continue to teach regardless how we are treating them. So overall, I believe this is should be a wake-up call or a period of really, really reflection of not just looking at where we come from and how we got here, but most importantly, where are we going? Mm-hmm. And when we use that word, where are we going, it means all of humanity. Not just one race, not just one language, but all of us. Mm-hmm. We all have that inherent responsibilities, not just to care for ourselves, but to care and to respect and to appreciate and to love this beautiful creation of ours. We call Mother Earth. We call it Mao Shitkamugoi, all of creation.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that Two-Eyed Seeing plays a big role in us working together and understanding each other?
Well, I believe, at least I hope, that this concept of looking at everything from another perspective, in which it was essential for us to coin as two-eyed seeing, because we have two eyes. And that eye doesn't matter. And one eye is from who you are, the nationality, the language that you met, that you were born with. And with the other eye, to use other perspectives, some other ways of knowing, other cultures, and so on. So it really should be a fundamental principle or objective of how we move forward by always checking, reflecting of our actions, and where and how do we need to refine them. Make them better, so that not only I will have a better opportunities, but also others will also have a better opportunities by my actions, by whatever I can contribute of maintaining love, balance, and appreciation for all living things, including us.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any final thoughts or advice that you would give to youth who are in high school, getting ready to leave their homes for the first time, maybe going to university or school? Do you have any thoughts that you'd like to share with them?
Well, my only encouragement is try to find out or determine the gift that you have been given, and to use and to share that gift that you have, because it's through that gift that's going to cultivate and encourage for relationships to develop and to evolve, because we are social beings. And we need something in which it would connect us much more intimately than what has been done in the past. And I believe sometimes those venues could be some gift that you may have, whether that gift is with music, with arts, with storytelling, or even humor. Because it's true humor, I believe, that will eventually transcend the differences that we may all feel we have. Because humor transcends, I believe, across the board. Doesn't matter what nationality, what social position you may have. That energy of humor, I think, has a tendency to unite us. So let's use humor to overshadow those imaginary boundaries that have been developed or imposed upon us, and look at what they are, and look what they did manage to do, because overall we have a big, big responsibility, not just for our own survival, but for the survival of people that we love. And that love does not only exist with humans. That love exists to all of creation. Because love is an overarching objective of our very existence here. And I like to remind you that without love, nothing and nobody survives. Because love is our overarching energy that the Creator has given us, in which He has a most unconditional love for all of us. And when I use that word all of us, it doesn't mean just I as a human being, but for every living thing. And with that understanding, I have to humble myself over and over again by reminding myself, I am not a superior being. I'm not her favorite. Every living thing is her responsibility and her favorite. So by embracing that concept, that everything that's alive is physical and is spiritual. And in everything that's alive needs love, appreciation, respect. And if we can somehow embrace that concept, then I believe we will give ourselves every opportunity to excel, because now we can call ourselves a healthy, competent Mi'kmaq.
Mm-hmm. I think that's love is a really, really great spot to end on, and I think that's a really good teaching to share with youth, and a good thing to wrap up on.
You know, and I think it's important because, see, for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't very enticing to say, I love you,
mm-hmm.
you know, a young female, because it somehow had this connotation to it, you know, that physically,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in our language, it's very simple because, you know, I can, for example, every person is beautiful. There's no question about it. Being a person, you're beautiful, you're beautiful. But, you know, that word is kelusin. But that word only in that context only means you know, I only see you as a physically beautiful human being,
mm-hmm.
person, not human being. But when you say mestakelusin,
mm-hmm.
you're not just seeing that person as a physically or whatever, be attractive or beautiful, but a beautiful person from the spiritual perspective. In other words, the gifts that you have, the energy that you are emitting is seen more than what you see with your hair, whatever, you know what I mean, whatever you have on.
Mm-hmm.
So love, I think, has to be now critical because let's face it, who can survive without love?
Mm-hmm.
Even the most people today that are walking around isolated, alone, they might say, nobody loves me.
Yeah.
But if they were really think and reflect for a moment, if somebody didn't love them, how could they be here saying it now? They would have been dead a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because without love, nothing survives.
Yeah. And could you talk just briefly, to wrap up, about love as the first teaching and why that's the first teaching?
Well, I'm sure you have heard about the seven guiding principles.
Yes, yeah.
Love is the first one. And of course, love, I'm sure love comes in layers. The love from the Creator is unconditional.
Mm-hmm.
So does a love between a mother and a child. And love, for the first 7 years of our lives, we use love in so many different ways. you love me, you don't love me, and so on, all that stuff. And then, honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty comes in which we now look at ourselves, you know, if we are honest and judge others if we are honest or not. Humility. Is something in which I could never toot my own horn. I can't say I did this, I did that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something is going to be bestowed upon me, it's going to be from others.
Mm-hmm.
Truth. Again, if you're not being told for, how can you have respect? Humility. It's being humble, respectful, compassionate, and loving. Wisdom. Everybody's seeking that. Now these seven gifts, they come in a chronological order.
Yes.
Every 7 years, we believe there is a transformation in our lives, physically, emotionally, intellectually, and even spiritually. Every 7 years, there is this transformation in all of us. So now we're now at the seventh one, which now we're now 28 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are still living by these seven guiding principles, then your spiritual awakening becomes evident and obvious to you. And as you continuously live by these seven guiding principles, when you get to be a certain age, you will be seen as being see, the word for wisdom in our language is sudwon. And that word encompasses actually, you can now be expected to provide something for someone, whether it's counseling or some other format, in which people will see that in you. So again, that word that I used earlier of living a life, and through that life in which you are living, you help others, especially young people, to be critical in their thinking through your example. So when the time comes then, and you are seen and you are living by these seven guiding principles, then you will be bestowed with this honor of being referred to as an elder.
Mm-hmm.
In which I cannot call myself an elder. Mm-hmm. because of the humility. I cannot toot my own horn. So, also, there's a thing there somewhere that nobody wants to talk about. And that's Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to break that word Alzheimer's, you become like a child again.
Right.
Because it's just like a form of a dementia, which eventually leads into an Alzheimer's. You regress, right? You keep going back until the time you'll be just like a child again. Mm-hmm. Being bad, you can't look at yourself. You know, everything has to be done for you. So, all in all, then, that that overarching, overdriving force there is love, compassion. Because from that, it nurtures us in us to be able to excel and to be able to share and to be able to contribute. Because in the language we even use it in this way, I'm set nogama on my relations. Mm-hmm. And from that, it really tells us that I as an individual, I'm very vulnerable and susceptible, because just like every living entity, we can succumb to incapacitation. Any one of us can become incapacitated. Now, if you are in this individual mode section, you have a problem. You can become incapacitated, a broken leg or some other way in which it will prevent you to function in a full capacity as a full human being. And if you're on this individual mode section, you have a problem, because your biggest concern is who's going to look after me, and who's going to look after my family. Mm-hmm. Because every one of us have a family, one way or the other. But if you're on this collective mode, all you have to do is utilize this energy that you have to recover from whatever it costs you to be incapacitated. And then once you're in balance again, well, then you can become a contributing member of the. But if you're on the other side, you got a big problem, because who's going to pay for this? Who's going to mind you? Who's going to look after you? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it creates a lot of hardship, a lot of problems. So I believe this is where I believe love itself will overshadow, overpower all those things that have caused us to be so divided up to this point. Mm-hmm. Because that invisible wall, somehow, we have validated it. We have allowed it to become real, but really it's not real. Someone else came up with that idea for whatever reasons they have. So again, love is our overarching objective. Because we love, which is what the Creator is all about anyway, love, the energy of love. And with that, we stand a better chance of surviving, not just as Mi'kmaq people, but surviving as humanity.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really great place to wrap up with. So thank you so much, Albert, for sharing with me today. There's a lot to unpack there and a lot of wisdom. And I know I'm very grateful to be here and to be able to listen to your wisdom and to hear from you. And I'm really happy to be able to share this with youth and other Mi'kmaq people and non-Mi'kmaq people in Mi'kma'ki and maybe even beyond. So thank you again so much for being here today with me and sharing with me.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Great.